Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dentzel, and you may want to check in your change drawer right now, or maybe in your car, the console in the middle where everybody puts their change. They have to go through a toll or something like that, or they go to a drive-in window and they get their change back, and you get the dollars, and maybe you put those in your purse or your wallet, but the change, kind of throw it into a cup or something like that. You might want to check that. I was reading this article. I think it was of Fox News. There are still at least a few very, very rare pennies out there. They're called wheat pennies or something like that. And specifically, you should be looking for the ones that were minted in 1943. One of those pennies, to collectors anyway, of course, a penny is just a penny for us regular people, but to a collector, one of those pennies could be worth $85,000. And the belief is that some of these pennies are still in circulation, even though, once again, it's been 1943, that'd be, what, 74 years? And you may want to check your change drawer, just in case. You could be riding around with one of those pennies. One of those pennies is probably worth more than your car times three or times four. In my case, if I have one of those pennies in my car, that penny's worth like 25 times my car, more than that even. That's funny. But in any case, a 1943 copper wheat pennies. And I was reading also that there are some fakes out there. People who have figured out that those pennies are worth something, and they try to make one of these 1943 copper wheat pennies out of a regular penny. So if they can find a penny that has a 1948 on it, they'll get a little file and, you know, shave off part of the 8 to make it look like a 3. And then you have an ability. Some people will make pennies out of metal instead of out of copper. And the way you determine the difference is that a copper penny won't stick to a magnet. But, of course, a metal one will, and if it sticks to a magnet, it's fake. I just find that stuff interesting. Once in a while, I run across a story like that. Well, there could be a dollar bill out there that is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars because of a mistake on it. And then there were those stamps. I don't know if there are some of them in the Smithsonian Institute. But Smithsonian Institution. What is it, Smithsonian Institute or Institution? I'm not sure. The stamps where it was printed upside down, I think it's for to commemorate the first flight at Kitty Hawk. So it's the Wright brothers' plane, but it's flipped upside down. I think that's what it is. And those were worth a lot of money to stamp collectors. So those kind of weird things like that, weird things from history always kind of catch my eye if I run into a story like that. So I just thought you'd want to know. You may could be cruising around today with a very, very rare penny in your change cup. I'm going to guess that there are other coins besides pennies, maybe nickels and dimes, that are rare as well, that have some story behind them. But this story was about pennies. Let's move to the show. I have to admit that what we're going to talk about now, when I first heard it, I said, that cannot be true. And more I thought about it, and the more I listened, and more I said, yeah, this is probably correct. I was listening to the Libertarian podcast. It's hosted by Troy Senek, who used to be a speechwriter for George W. Bush, but the Libertarian podcast, the main subject every time, the libertarian is Richard Epstein. So on every episode, Troy Senek interviews Richard Epstein about something that's going on. Richard Epstein is a well-known law professor and has written several books about the law and does speaking engagements. And he's been a law professor for longer probably than he'd like to say. And I think that Richard Epstein has to be into his 70s by now. But They were talking about France, they were talking about immigration, and they were talking about the EU. And you can find this podcast at hoover.org. And every week, I think it comes out on a Wednesday. Could be about Gorsuch. It could be about certain decisions that were made at the Supreme Court recently. But this particular topic this week was about France, the EU, and immigration. And it was somewhat timely given that just a week and a half ago, we had that shooting on the Champs-Élysées. I hope I'm saying that right. Richard Epstein made the point about the EU that since the EU has started, became an official organization with the euro being created. Now, we know before that there were subtler versions of the EU going way back to the 1970s. But in its form now, with the there's no more lira, there's no more franc, there's no more Deutschmark, it's all euros now. But since the euro came into effect in the late 90s, not one major corporation has been created in the EU. Now, in contrast, like he points out, in contrast, what has gone on in the United States, for example, we've had eBay, Google, Amazon. Maybe Amazon might have started a little before the EU started, but didn't really become prominent until the 2000s. So despite all of these countries working together, having a lot of the same laws, of course, regarding monetary policy, immigration policy, some of the barriers being knocked down between these countries that existed in the past, because of the economic attitude that they continue to have, there's no corporations being created there. None of the corporations that have been created have stuck around. Even if you start thinking about, for example, for me being that I'm kind of into jets and jet crashes, I, of course, first think of Airbus. Airbus was created before the EU started. Airbus started in kind of different companies, government companies coming together. Really came to prominence in the 1980s. So well before the EU as we know it now came into existence. That's the first corporation I think of, big business that I think of. It's something that's interesting. I never thought about that. As much as we've talked about the EU on this program, the European Union, and its problems and the way it taxes people and companies and immigration and migrants from Syria and all of that, and terrorism, it never occurred to me to think about, have any major corporations come about in Europe after the EU got started in 1999? The answer is no. That should show you, you know, what's wrong with what is going on over there, where it seems that when these countries were just left to their own devices, they had their own monetary policies and own immigration policies and own employment policies that, of course, we all know about the German car companies, for example. And we know about all of the French wine companies. And, of course, Italy has car companies. And all of those things have existed for decades and decades well before the EU, but since the EU started, nothing like that, at least that if it's been started, it hasn't stuck around too long. Any corporation that, just no major corporation, I gave the other examples of Google, American examples, Google, eBay, Amazon, I guess you could call Facebook as well. None of that is happening in the EU. Very interesting. It's just, I love hearing something like that, so something that really jumps out to me, something that's like right in front of my face and I don't even realize it. Amazing. Thought I want to start you off with that in this program, so you might want to check that out for yourself. Let's move on to other news. The University System of California, this has gotten some attention in this past week. There was an audit done of the university system in California. and the University of California and all its satellite campuses. Of course, there's Berkeley. We just talked about Berkeley. There's UCLA and the rest of them. Stanford would not be considered to be part of that. USC is not part of that. But just the University of California university system. What the auditor discovered, and Janet Napolitano, remember her from the Barack Obama administration. She is the, what do they call it, president, chancellor, regent. She heads up the entire University of California university system. It was discovered that the university system was hiding money. And the number, the actual number, dollar amount is in question. It's somewhere between $38 million and $175 million. And the reason this is causing problems is because the University System of California has recently raised tuition. I think this was the first raising in tuition that it has had in 6 years. And a lot of people, of course, were complaining about that. A lot of parents complaining about that. A lot of students complaining about that. And I don't know how this audit even got started, but it does seem like Janet Napolitano and others were trying to hide that money while raising tuition at the same time. And also what you discover in this audit is that there are some people working in the University of California system who are making exorbitant salaries. And so a lot of people are ticked off that here they had all this money in reserve and they're still raising tuition and still raising salaries of people who work there. Now, you should be known something. And this is, see, you know how I feel about colleges and universities in the United States anyway. And I think that many conservatives share my dislike of what goes on there. Not just, and this was well before students started throwing, you know, riot parties at Berkeley. That we as conservatives don't like them because we believe that they teach kids the wrong things. They're not free speech areas. There's a lot of reasons that conservatives have come to dislike the university and college system in the United States, just not in California. One of the other problems with universities and colleges in the United States, and this is why I continue to say personally that I think at some point education and sports need to be disconnected. You go on to virtually any major university campus these days and you start looking at their books, and not even the private, it's just the public information. Who is the highest paid person at that university? It's usually the football coach. I think that's true even at some schools where the football programs aren't as prominent as Alabama or Clemson or USC or UCLA or Michigan and Ohio State. Even at football, even at schools where their football team barely makes it into the top 20 every year, the football coach is the highest paid person on the books. And it's a little weird for that to be the case at a school. Shouldn't maybe the president be the highest paid? Shouldn't maybe some of the professors who have been there a while be the highest paid? Nope, it's not even close. I know. I'm a University of Pittsburgh fan. And being that I grew up in the Pittsburgh area, and I've been a Pitt fan, you're either a Pitt fan or you're a Penn State fan in Pennsylvania. And their football coach was the highest paid. In fact, I think when J.B. Dixon, who had been the basketball coach, I think he was the highest paid employee of University of Pittsburgh until he left to go to, I think he went to TCU. So there's that. And that everybody, I think everybody kind of knows that, but nobody wants to admit that that's kind of a problem. At a school, an athletic coach is the highest paid person. Seems like your priorities are a little out of whack. A little out of whack. And that's why I say eventually I think sports and education need to be separated. So I'm guessing, getting back to the University of California and being run by Janet Napolitano, when they went and started looking at these salaries, I bet they discovered that the UCLA football coach and the University of California at Berkeley, which is just known as Cal in sports lingo, are probably some of the highest paid employees of the university system. The basketball coaches at these universities are probably some of the highest paid. I'm guessing that the athletic directors who kind of oversee all the sports and schedules everything, the head of that department, the whole athletic department, probably has a very, very high salary. And what those guys and women are getting paid dwarfs what the professors are getting paid. Now, it should be known, I mean, it's kind of funny in that it surely seems to me that those people, the money that they're spending on sports, they're certainly getting more out of that than they are out of the education because of my attitude toward education on many of these campuses. Whereas at least their sports teams are doing decently well. So I'm going to guess that that was part of it. And there is a part of me that starts to wonder what happens, and see, I think that this is going to happen sooner than we realize. That athletics is not a bastion of liberalism. I wouldn't say that it's a bastion of conservatism either. I wouldn't say that. Not at the professional level and not at the amateur level, or if you just want to say it, at the college university level. I think that it's a mixture, and I think that in a lot of ways, owners of sports teams, for the most part, you know, try to stay out of politics, and although we may know the religious affiliation of some very, very prominent athletes in the United States from football, basketball, baseball, politics, fortunately, doesn't play a huge, huge part. And I think, being that we just talked about ESPN yesterday or the day before, one of its downfalls has been that it has gotten into politics, I think. How long are liberals on these campuses going to allow the football coaches and all these athletic people to make all the money that they're making? Being that they are social justice warriors, and they believe that what's being taught on campus, the liberalism, is surely more important than what goes on the football field. I'm not saying that you can't be a social justice warrior and not be a sports fan. I suppose you can. But surely at some point they draw the line when a football coach is making millions of dollars. I mean, Nick Saban for Alabama makes millions of dollars. Highest paid, I think, coach on any campus anywhere. How long are they going to stand for him to be paid what he is being paid when these professors in the African American studies departments and the women's studies departments make a lot less? I don't know if the people who run these universities and colleges have figured that out yet. I don't know if they see that coming. I do see that coming. And that'll be one way, I think, eventually, where sports and education are finally going to be disconnected from each other. Now, the reason that those usually men get paid so much is because they're in high demand. The reason they're in high demand is because universities have convinced themselves that football and sports are a good way to market the school, with like Duke basketball and how well it does every year, that it's a very easy way because Duke is on national TV, that's an easy way for these schools to attract the best students. Hey, come here, go to the basketball games, look how much fun it is, and yes, we're a great school, and it's no different with Alabama and their football team, Clemson and their football team, Michigan, Ohio State. Look how you're going to get a good education. Of course, Ohio State and Michigan are known all over the country, if not the world. And that diploma you'll have will be good anywhere. But you're also going to have this great time. And so sports is a good way to get, I wouldn't necessarily call it free advertising, but it's just good bang for the buck advertising. How long are those liberals who are throwing tantrums on Berkeley and elsewhere going to put up with these guys and some women? There's some very well-paid women coaches out there, probably in basketball, women's basketball. How long are they going to put up with that? See, I don't think it's going to be very long. In fact, I think that that is something, if I live to be 80 years old, I will see. I think I will see that. I will see. I think that we will see a huge backlash on campuses against people making a lot of money. I mean, if they are the socialists that they say they are, and everybody should be paid the same, and the universities and colleges are easily the most liberal places in the United States, even well more liberal than you get into the cities of the United States. I really believe that. Then at some point, they're going to start enacting that socialism, because some of them are true believers, on what people are getting paid on that campus. And the first people they're going to come from, just like in out in real life out here, they want to come after CEOs and people making a lot of money. They're going to go after all of those athletic coaches making all this money. I wonder what's going to happen. It's going to be very, very interesting to watch. I don't know how it's going to go. Is that going to be the point at which the administrators of these universities put their foot down and say, that's just the way it's going to go? Because then you're going to see riots probably on these campuses that have nothing to do with Ann Coulter showing up or Milo showing up or some conservative showing up. These people will be protesting against the administration itself and the way it's dishing out dollars. Those dollars should be going, if you have all that money to spend on sports, that money should be going to these programs, these studies programs, lesbian studies, liberal studies, or not liberal, liberal studies in college means totally something different. But African-American studies and all of these disciplines that I'm not sure anybody can actually use in the real world. You know, I can understand. I just want you to know something about all that. These colleges and universities, they're more than welcome to offer any classes that they want. If people are going to go and sign up for them, I don't know what you can do. But that somebody can major in African-American studies is strange to me. I would never think that I could go to a campus and could get anything out of an Irish-American studies program. And I say that simply because I'm two-thirds Irish. I don't know what I would get out of that. But that's what's going on campuses these days, and I think they're just becoming more common. I'm not saying there shouldn't be classes on, if you want to learn about black history in the United States, going well back, you know, before slavery ended and how the lives of blacks have changed over the years and where we need to go from here. I totally understand that. Even as a conservative, I completely understand that. If people want to sign up to take a class like that, perfectly fine by me. But that you have a major where you can take all of these credits in that, I don't know how that's going to be useful, that it exists. I don't know. So it's a very interesting story. Now, there's another part of it, though, that is kind of the humorous part, that it doesn't seem that anybody has caught on to. And that I want to give Janet Napolitano actually a little pat on the back for all of this. That there is some government entity out there, even if it's not at the federal level, but it's at the state level. And especially considering it's in California, that she found a way to save money, to actually collect money and not spend it, but to actually have it in some account there, just sitting there. I want to give her a pat on the back, because that's the first time ever that I think I've heard of any place, any government entity anywhere where they were actually saving money. They were taking money, and it was a little too much than what they needed. They didn't spend it, and they saved it for a rainy day. I want to give her all the credit in the world. Having said everything that I've said for the last about 15 minutes about how messed up the university system is in the United States, not just in California, but in every state, and higher education, how messed up it is, I want to give her credit for finding a way to save some money in case something bad happens. Now, I know some people are going to portray, well, she was trying to enrich herself, and it was a secret fund and everything. Maybe the reason she made it a secret fund is because she knew if anybody knew about it, they'd want to spend it. Could it be? They want to spend it on something frivolous. Maybe building a new soccer stadium for some university or something that she didn't think the university system needs. Is it possible? Either way, I just want to give her credit because it doesn't seem that we're certainly not doing that at the federal level. There's certainly no department at the federal level that's socking away money for a rainy day. Every department in the federal government runs a deficit. They spend all the money that they get and more. So whether it's, I don't care if it's $38 million that she was allegedly hiding away up to $175 million, that if it was even $1 million, I'd be impressed. And I know I'm laughing, but I want you to know I'm being totally serious about this. Shouldn't we be saying to Janet Napolitano, good job, Janet. You were taking in that money and you were not spending all of it. You were seeing that there might be something that might happen in the future and you got this money. Yeah, we know that maybe it was a secret account. We know that you're raising tuition and all this, but we want you to know how proud we are of you that you found a way to save money. Because you look at, for example, if you look at a university system in Pennsylvania, which is it's a lot smaller, and the schools are a lot smaller. Pitt and Penn State are not part of the university system, the state university system in Pennsylvania. These schools are a lot smaller. You have Slippery Rock, and you have several other schools, IUP, that are not Division I schools. They're like Division II, Division III, at least athletically, according to their size and what their budgets are. I don't think that system is saving $1 million anywhere. In fact, they're talking about cutting back. You know, they're looking at, they're having problems in the Pennsylvania school system, the college system there in Pennsylvania. I don't think that whoever their president is saving any money. But somehow Janet Napolitano in California, also a state where it loves running in the red, can't pay off its bills. People, businesses moving away from there. The tax system is crazy. The regulation system is crazy. And amidst all of that, Janet Napolitano has figured out the way to save some money. The government of California should be so smart. So, I see this story, and the story is several places about what's going on, what Janet Napolitano did, and has these funds, and raising a tuition, and these exorbitant salaries. I don't see any conservative side of this saying what I just said. Why are we so quick to criticize her? Why? Shouldn't we applaud something that we say government should be doing anyway? That if they do collect more money than they take in, maybe they should save it and just stick it around, keep it around for something. Just in case, because you never know what can pop up. Instead of just saying, well, we got this money, we got to spend it. Because they're never going to give it back to us. Although I do remember back in the George W. Bush years, I remember we did get a refund or something. Remember that? I have to look that up. Why did that happen? I have to look that up. So I just want you to know, Janet, I know you have no idea who I am. I hate your university system in California. I hate it in all the other 49 states as well because of what's taught there. But I just wanted you to know that I'm going to give you a lot of thanks and credit today on America's Conservative Podcast. For amidst all of the craziness in California, you found a way to save money. Good for you. And I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. I think I want to make a couple more points regarding Janet Napolitano, because I think there is a lesson to be learned in all this. I really do. We as conservatives, I really believe that. Some of you may say, well, shouldn't, and it's a perfectly fine thinking, and I'm sure some conservatives are going to fall into this trap, that, well, being that they have all this money saved, then she should have kept tuition the same. I take a supply and demand attitude toward this. If this was a private company and it was making more money than ever, and it found some way to save money, it had its expenses, has profits, all the shareholders are getting paid off, all of the employees are getting paid, none of their checks are bouncing, they have no, they're paying their bills on time and everything. There is no reason for a company to keep its prices the same just because it's making a lot of money. That is a socialist attitude toward business. Prices are dependent on supply and demand. That's it. Doesn't matter how much money you're making. Supply and demand. If demand is up, prices go up. If demand is down, prices go down. Supply and demand, back and forth. The curve's moving all over the place. And you find out if you made too much of something, then it may be you may need to lower the prices to move some of them, whether it's cars, widgets, whatever. So just because a company is making more profits than ever, which you could say is happening in this case, doesn't mean prices should stay the same. And I realize this is a government entity, it's not a private entity, but the school systems in the United States, at least the higher education after high school, they kind of work the same way. They are competing for students. So there is a version of supply and demand that goes on. And there are only so many desks, there are only so many chairs, there are only so many professors, there are only so many buildings. So there are limited resources to help those students who want to go. It's not like every student in the United States could go and enroll in the University of California system. The University of California system, despite it being huge, would not be able to accommodate all the students. So at some point, supply and demand is going to play a role. And if they're raising prices for students, maybe they are gouging them. I don't even know what that word gouging means. If they don't like it, they don't have to go there. But when you start saying, well, being that they have all this extra money, the prices should stay the same, or tuition should go down, you are buying into a liberal argument. And I don't. She wants to raise the prices, the tuition, which is essentially the price of going to school there. She can do it. And the administration can do it. They have no responsibility to keep it to the same just to be nice. And we can get into why. We know the reasons, other reasons that college tuition has gone up over the years. It has a lot to do with student loans. It's easier than ever to get student loans. So more people have money, more people going to school, prices go up. Demand goes up, prices go up. So to restrict supply, because they know you can't, there's, like I said, they don't have chairs for everybody. They don't have dorms for everybody. So at some point, they have to start raising prices to the point where some people just say, well, maybe if it's going to be that expensive, I'll just go somewhere else. So I'm not going to give her a hard time about raising tuition just because they have this account with all this money in it. She could raise tuition to $1 million a year for all I care. If people are going to pay to go there, what are you going to do? I don't know. Hey, as you know, I don't know why anybody goes to any of these schools. But if they're going to go there, then those schools have the right to determine what tuition is going to be and how many people go there. And because when you buy into that, they should keep the prices the same, tuition shouldn't go up. Well, the next step is, well, then tuition should go down. And then on top of that, then liberals will tell you, well, at that point, why have tuition at all? And that's when we start talking about, well, education should be free. Nobody should be paying to go to any of these schools. And that's where that argument is. Liberals are going to try to take you in that argument, and you need to stick to your supply and demand. Just remember that. Don't be tricked by that. Don't be tricked. I also need to give Janet Napolitano credit because it couldn't have been easy to have that money in a place where people wouldn't know about it. Because you have to, politicians both on the right and the left, it's almost like they have extra centuries perception regarding this, that they can automatically tell some department is running under budget, that some department is not spending everything that it should. It's like an ESP type of thing. So because they automatically, when you get in government, the fix for everything is spending money. That the University of California system didn't do that. They took in money and didn't spend it, and then were able to, I guess you could say, hide it. I don't know if it was done illegally, allegedly, ethically, immorally. I have no idea. But they did it, that it was done at all. I give her all the credit in the world that they took an audit to find it. Good for you. Good for you, Janet Napolitano. I never thought I'd say that in my life at all, but I'm ecstatic about it. I love that story because you can learn so much from it. It's not really even a political story. It's a story about government because it's government schools, but it's not necessarily a political. There's no talk about immigration or pro-choice or pro-life or anything like that, but I think you can learn so much from it. I love it. Let's move on to something else. And this is for all of you who tried to convince me that I needed to vote for Donald Trump because the alternative was Hillary Clinton. Cruz spokesman Amanda Carpenter has made the very good point that we do have a Hillary... Excuse me, got some burps going on right at this second. You'll notice I'm not sniffling as much and not sneezing or coughing and everything. That's what happens when allergy season goes away. It's just February into March, man. Wow, it's just a killer. Speaking of which, I read an article this past weekend that say there might be a link between pollen allergy and suicide. That's true. You should do a Google search and read that. That's fascinating. I don't know if it's true or not, but it was a fascinating read. But Amanda Carpenter, former spokesman for Ted Cruz, I guess during his campaign in the primaries last year, she says she's made the point that Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's daughter, actually is Hillary Clinton. How is she any different than Hillary Clinton? Because Ivanka is out there talking about, you know, breaking the glass ceiling for women and empowering women and everything. And Amanda Carter, I think this was, she was speaking on CNN, wants to remind everybody that Ivanka Trump knows nothing about that. Zero. Zip. Zilch. So, and I think this was in response. I think this has probably been something that she's probably wanted to talk about for a long time, given that how feminists have propped up Hillary as being the perfect woman. And look at her. She's been a senator. She's been Secretary of State. She's written some popular books. It takes a village. And look at all this stuff that she's done. And women should pattern their lives after her. But now these same women are making fun of Ivanka Trump. And I think what's going on here is Amanda is in some ways agreeing with them, but she's also pointing out, well, how is it that you can totally respect Hillary Clinton when Ivanka Trump is virtually the same person? In fact, Ivanka Trump's a Democrat. She's pro-choice. She has a lot of the same ideas regarding family leave and all that that Hillary Clinton does. But these liberal women are going to make fun of Ivanka Trump. But Hillary Clinton is the best woman in the world. Liberal women will make fun of Ivanka Trump for excusing her dad's behavior and what he says about women and everything. What has Hillary done? What did she do during the time that Bill Clinton was sexually harassing this woman and that woman and coming to his defense for Monica Lewinsky and making fun of all of these women who claimed that they were raped by Bill Clinton? She's defended him, just like Ivanka Trump has defended Donald Trump, although I'm not sure that Donald Trump has ever raped any women or anything, but he certainly is a cad. He certainly says a lot of underhanded things about women, and whether it's funny or not, I don't know if somebody in his position should be saying stuff like that, especially now that he's president, and even beforehand when he was CEO of his companies. So all these liberal women attacking him, attacking her, when really Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are the same kind of thing, even though I know Ivanka's Donald Trump's daughter, not his wife. So for all of you, and also on top of that, Ivanka Trump, it's becoming very clear, has a lot of sway over her father. Probably more than anybody out there. More than probably his wife, more than anybody his cabinet, more than Rance Priebus, however you say his name, more than Steve Bannon, anybody. It's her, and then it's Jared Kushner, and then it's everybody else. And this is exactly why, even before Donald Trump became president, or after he became president, some of these cabinet members started getting selected, I said, I'm not sure any of this means anything. I don't think it matters. So for all of you that were so fearful about Hillary Clinton being in the White House, well, guess what? We have a Hillary Clinton in the White House now. She may not be officially the president, but she's certainly there, and she certainly has the president's ear. Didn't think that far, did you? See, I did. I'm not here to slap myself on the back. I don't like being right about these things. I don't. But I knew it was going to be true simply because Donald Trump has been a Democrat his whole life. And I also knew that Ivanka Trump and her husband Jared are Democrats who couldn't even vote for their father / father-in-law in the New York primary because of it. And we all knew they were going to play significant roles in Donald Trump's presidency. And now here you go. And Amanda Carpenter gets it exactly right. And it reminds me, once again, see, this is the one more reason why I think the Trump administration eventually, even, you know, how long are we? 3 months in, I don't think it's going to be able to hold together for 4 years. Because Amanda Carpenter is obviously an intelligent, well-spoken woman. She worked for Ted Cruz. Who worked for Donald Trump during his campaign? We forgot her so soon. We just mentioned her a couple weeks ago. She'd been out of the news for like months, and then all of a sudden she was in it again. Who was it? Katrina Pearson. Now you compare Amanda Carpenter to Katrina Pearson. Amanda Carpenter is playing in the major leagues. You can tell. You watch that video. You know she knows what she's talking about. She's smart. Absolutely qualified to be talking about whatever the topic is. Katrina Pearson, if Amanda Carpenter is in the major leagues, Katrina Pearson is playing little league. This should tell you something about Donald Trump and the kind of organizations that he runs. And I tried to warn you. And you could see it during the primary. you could see that you looked at the spokesman for some of these other candidates, and then you compared that to the spokesman for Katrina Pierce, for Donald Trump, who was Katrina Pearson, night and day. But all of you chose to go with Katrina Pearson thinking instead of Amanda Carpenter thinking. And I know you want to keep believing. I'm not hopeful on this at all. And I mean, I have a story here that Donald Trump said he was going to get rid of NAFTA. Now he's just going to renegotiate it. I see. Suddenly, you know, China's a currency manipulator. Suddenly it's not. How soon, and I sent this message to my buddy Dave this morning. How soon before Donald Trump starts a remove Gorsuch movement? I know it's funny. I am totally serious about that. Because I know between now and when Donald Trump ceases to be president, Neil Gorsuch is probably going to do a lot of things that Donald Trump hates. You think he's just going to sit there and take it? How soon before he comes out and starts blasting his own Supreme Court nominee? And then you'll get to see what I've been talking about for a while. Because no matter how much all of you who are Donald Trump supporters, who maybe, I don't know if anybody like that listens to this program anymore. I have no idea. But if any of you are out there, you have to admit this hasn't gone the way you thought. And I know you're going to keep falling back on that. Well, at least he's not Hillary Clinton. Well, a Hillary Clinton clone is certainly speaking in his ear. But I want to give Amanda Carpenter all the credit in the world. And I want, you know, I have to wonder, you know, was this, is she still Ted Cruz's spokesman? I mean, was this just during the primary? I'm not sure about all of that. But I would have to think that if she is out there saying this so openly, that this is probably a thought that Ted Cruz has in his mind as well. And if he has it in his mind, I'm sure he's talked to other senators, other politicians about this and about the Ivanka slash Jared problem that is in the White House. I bet. And being that she obviously was friends with Ted Cruz and probably wants to still be friends with Ted Cruz, she would not go out and say something like this unless she thought she was comfortable doing that, meaning that maybe Ted Cruz gave her kind of the okay to do that. And it's probably what you heard from her talking about Ivanka Trump and comparing to Hillary Clinton is probably a discussion that has been had many times behind the scenes between her and other Ted Cruz people, if not Ted Cruz himself, and now it's just getting out into public. And she's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. She's absolutely right. And I think she did a great job on this. And I think that this is a foreshadowing of things to come. Not her saying more necessarily, but of Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner having influence on Donald Trump. And this is going to go in a direction that a lot of you Trump supporters don't want it to go. And that's why I said, even before Donald Trump got elected, even though I think he didn't get elected, you liberals out there, you're going to like a lot. Eventually. Not now. I know you're all crazy and it's all a Russian conspiracy. I know. But I wonder if you're going to hang on to that Russian conspiracy angle as much when Donald Trump starts doing a lot of things that you like. I'm going to guess that Russian conspiracy stuff is going to fade right away. I have a prediction. Although I don't think it's going to happen today or tomorrow, eventually that's going to happen. Let's move on to something else. Ann Coulter, you know, she was supposed to speak at Berkeley. That didn't happen. That did not happen yesterday. The question now is, who canceled it? Did Ann Coulter cancel it or did Berkeley cancel it? She's saying that they canceled it. They're saying that she canceled it. Now, it's important, I think, for and Coulter to make that argument. I have no idea which one is true. Maybe the truth is somewhere in between, like a divorce. There's his story, there's her story, and then there's the real story. I wonder, she has to do that and say that Berkeley canceled it because she can't be seen as a scaredy cat. She can't be seen as being that she's so, the way she has painted herself for the last 20 years and portrayed herself and confronting liberals anywhere, everywhere, she can't be seen as somebody who backed away from something like that. So she needs to keep up appearances. Meanwhile, Berkeley doesn't want to get into a situation where it has to admit that it can't control its own campus, its own town, to the point where a speaker can, you know, comes in and is afraid of getting, you know, shot or attacked or anything else. So each of them have their reasons to tell the story that they've been telling. That she canceled it? No, they canceled it. I don't know. She didn't speak. And if the situation was that she canceled it because she was fearful, I would hope that if she did cancel it on her own, I'm hoping that the reason was not because she was afraid she was going to get attacked. You know, she's the one talking. And I realize that with what I do with this program and the other program, Missing Persons Program, that I have to take responsibility for what happens on these shows. If somebody doesn't like it, they want to do something about it, I have to take responsibility for that. However, I also know that if I do something and somebody else suffers the fallout from it, that I have to take responsibility for that as well. And I'm hoping that the reason that Ann Coulter, if she did cancel it, was because she understood that other people were going to suffer for what she's doing. And that would show a sense of humility that she usually has not shown over the years. Whereas if she's saying, well, I didn't show up because I was afraid I was going to get attacked. Well, yeah, what about all those other people who are going to suffer? You don't care about them? So it's an interesting situation where I don't know if we're ever going to know the truth, because each of them has a reason to give their story to keep up, once again, to keep up appearances. Each of them has a reputation to protect. The police in Berkeley don't want to admit that they couldn't control the situation or the administration, and she doesn't want to admit that she backed away because she was afraid of getting attacked. I don't know. I have no idea. But it didn't happen. I don't know what it's going to mean for future speakers. Obviously, the liberal speaker is going to be able to go into the campus and there'll be rainbows and unicorns. I still come back to, I don't know why any conservatives do any of this. It's an inefficient way to communicate to people. The people who end up suffering from this are people not connected to what she's doing at all. Whether the police should be better or more protective and be tougher or whatever else, I understand all of that. But that a lot of innocent people are damaged by when she shows up, and that should be taken into consideration. And instead, Ann Coulter should be finding new venues where people are actually interested and curious about what she has to say. Instead of going into the heart of liberalism in the United States as if she's trying to prove a point. She says, well, we're proving the point that universities and campuses are all crazy. And we already knew that. That you think you still have to prove that point after 20 years is the reason that you're wrong doing it. We already know. I'm going to save that maybe for tomorrow. I got to go. You can find me at edwarddensel.com. Find this program Tuesday through Saturday, 2 a.m. I think it's 2 a.m. Maybe not yet. 9 p.m. or 2 a.m. Eastern Time on redstatetalkradio.com. You can find this podcast at Podomatic and iTunes as well. My other program, Unfound, find it at Podomatic and iTunes. Follow it on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. New episode coming out tomorrow. Very excited about it. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.